from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Sexual assault on American college campuses has been big in the headlines because it's bad and because some fed-up young women are saying enough. Now, the White House has gone big on the issue, too, out this week with a new plan to fight back, new guidelines to improve the way schools handle sexual assault cases. Will it work this hour on Point? Sexual assault on campus and what it will take to rein it in. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Have you heard the 1 in 5 number of young women assaulted? Why so high? And will this stop it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Big public service announcement campaign on as well. Part of this, here's one with Hollywood stars Benicio del Toro, Dula Hill, Steve Carroll, Daniel Craig, Seth Meyers, promoting putting an end to sexual assault.
We have a big problem, and we need your help.
It's happening on college campuses, at bars, at parties, even in high schools.
It's happening to our sisters and our daughters.
Our wives and our friends.
It's called sexual assault, and it has to stop.
We're going to hear in this hour from Senator Claire McCaskill, who has pushed hard on military sexual assault and is now looking at the campus problem. But first, for the latest, Katie J.M. Baker joins me from New York. She covers higher ed for BuzzFeed and has been reporting on the sexual assault problem. Katie Baker, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So welcome. Thank you. And from Washington, Annie Clark joins us. She is co-founder of End Rape on Campus. It's a group that helps students file federal complaints against colleges for their handling of sexual misconduct cases. She is a survivor of sexual assault, is the lead complainant in the Title IX and Clery complaints against the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Blogs for Huffington Post. Annie Clark, welcome to On Point. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for having me.
Katie, what's in the White House push here? What are the main elements of their kind of action plan for dealing with this?
Well, it's interesting because the new recommendations build upon the Dear Colleague letter that was released by the administration in 2011, which kind of warned colleges that they had to adhere to Title IX, which is a gender equity law, which prohibits sex-based discrimination. So this really fleshes out a lot of that, which, you know, since 2011, more and more students filed complaints against their schools, and there seemed to be a lot of issues with transparency and how these investigations were taking place and how different departments were coordinating with each other. And so I think something that's most exciting about these new recommendations is it outlines how the Department of Justice and the Department of Education can work together. The White House has a new website, notalone.gov, where certain information will be available, for example, resolutions for certain colleges. Unfortunately, it won't show current pending complaints or current investigations, but it will show resolutions, which is really great. It will help students understand their rights because these laws are really complicated. There's Title IX and then there's the Clery Act, which is it requires that schools accurately report violence on campus. So, you know, a lot of this stuff is just really confusing for students, especially, you know, students who are dealing with, something as traumatizing as sexual assault. And what is most exciting to me about this report is it takes onus off of students to tell their own stories and to hold their own schools accountable.
Annie Clark, you've done a lot of work to raise this issue to public attention. Now you've got a White House response in reaction to your work and that of others. What do you see as the most important? We'll look at what may not be here, but what do you see as the most important recommendations for colleges in dealing with sexual assault in this task force report, Annie?
I think what we heard a lot yesterday is that this is just the first step. We have recommendations, for example, about a survey, hopefully with oversight, where we'll be able to start to see the gaps that these current laws aren't covering and how we can craft legislation that fills in those gaps. I think that's important.
That is, on the survey front, they're pushing colleges to survey their students to ascertain what the real maybe unreported frequency of sexual assault.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think something that Katie Baker just mentioned, the transparency piece, which is something within the Department of Education they've struggled with. Even agencies within the department, for example, the Office for Civil Rights, which oversees Title IX cases, and the Clery Compliance Division, previously haven't even communicated. So I think some of this transparency is going to open that up and help them work together to more effectively assist students and investigate schools who aren't in compliance.
Transparency meaning what?
Yeah, that's a really good question because it's nuanced, and I think we really need to be specific. Some people advocate listing the schools that are under investigation. Some people say that might harm survivors who are concerned about their safety if their school is listed while an investigation is still ongoing. So a lot of that is in the works, but I definitely think the recommendations after a school is found not in compliance should be listed and shouldn't be buried in the Department of Education's website. You should be able to find a list of schools so we can learn from each other. And currently, the best list has come from places like the Huffington Post and Congresswoman Jackie Speier's office.
It's not from the Department of Education. List of schools under investigation for what?
For underreporting sexual assault, for mishandling sexual assault cases, and basically for denying students the equal opportunity that they should have when they go to a university based on their gender.
Katie, I think we have to back up here a little bit because you guys are deep in this and there are a lot of assumptions here. And it sounds kind of like just a bunch of it sounds bureaucratic. So what's the problem been and what are the recommendations in this task force study that are intended to address it?
Yes, it's a complicated question. I was talking to a higher education consultant yesterday who said you need an FAQ just to understand this FAQ. But I think the biggest issues is that, you know, one in five women is the victim of sexual assault in college. And so many colleges have come under fire recently for failing to handle their sexual assault complaints. So, you know, basically you have under Title IX, students are, you know, if you report a complaint, you're entitled to certain accommodations. For example, even before the, you know, even if you don't formally file a complaint, if you want to get some distance from your attacker, you can, you know, ask to switch classes or to switch housing. And students, in the years that I've reported on this, one of the biggest issues is that, you know, students are unable to do that. So they're, you know, kind of forced to stay in class or live alongside, you know, the people who attacked them.
Okay.
Okay,
so is that changed with this task force report?
Well, this report reiterates that one of the problems I see with this report is that a lot of, you know, Title IX already had a lot of this language, and it's just so confusing that this report really fleshes it out. So now hopefully schools will really understand what they have to do to ensure that education is equitable. So it reiterates, yes, these accommodations are important. Yes, schools have to respond in these certain ways. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't really see anything in this report that focuses on what will happen to administrations who continue not to comply. And that's something I see missing here.
Annie, help us here. The one in five number gets everybody's attention. It just sounds unbelievable and outrageous. Then on top of that, you hear that there's a generic problem among colleges failing to effectively handle sexual assault complaints. Why that failure and what in this report might begin to address it, Annie?
Yeah, definitely. And I don't think this is a new problem. It's very important to point out that this has been happening for years. It was just 2012, 2013 that we started to put a face to it. Jane Doe finally had, you know, a name and a face, and more survivors started to speak out. And that actually put pressure on the administration to do something. And so even though that statistic has already mm-hmm. been there, you're starting to connect and actually recognize, oh, wow, this is actually, you know, a very large problem. And so, like Katie said, with the recommendations, I think one of the strongest things is that, you know, Vice President Biden got up there and said yesterday that women aren't responsible for this. No one should ever be assaulted. It's not your fault. And we need to do a better job educating our men. So I don't see anything particularly new here that shouldn't have already been happening. It's just great that we finally have the attention of the White House and Congress. And things that are happening at schools, for example, you know, sanctions. We have serial perpetrators on campus who, instead of being suspended or expelled, as I believe they should be, are getting things like apology papers and reflections and essay assignments. And so I think, you know, earlier we were talking the very nuanced details of the law, which I think some schools are confused about. But the issue is that you have one in four women who will, along with their degree, if they graduate, also have the title of survivor. It's a second degree in a sense.
Are you saying that this task force begins to step up? I mean, I'm reading here people saying this is some carrots and no sticks.
Well, I think I can give a good example of how complicated this is. So the campus climate survey, so, you know, as we were talking about before, it's a great idea. It's crucial. You know, it's crucial that because it's estimated that 63% of schools fail to report, accurately report campus violence. So to go to the students and listen to them instead of just the schools, that's great.
And then have to make that public so everybody can see it.
Yes. But you can't just, you know, we already know that there's a problem. So to me, we don't just need to hear from students, yes, sexual assault is a problem. We need to hear, you know, what was the adjudication process like if you went through it? How was the perpetrator, if found, you know, if someone's found to be a perpetrator of sexual misconduct, how were they penalized? What happened to them? So I think just, you know, and this is kind of an example of how this is an amazing first step that we're hearing about this from the White House, from the president. But, you know, we already know that sexual assault is a problem.
Katie, I got to let you go right there. I appreciate you joining us for a few minutes from New York. Thank you so much. Annie Clark, please stick with us. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about the White House call to action on sexual assault on college campuses. You're going to be hearing a lot about this, public service announcements out there, and a lot of talk about it at the White House yesterday. Here's one of these announcements. This is President Obama and Vice President Joe Biden.
The worst abuse of power is when a man raises his hand to hurt a woman. We all have to take responsibility. So if you see someone threatening a woman, step up, speak out, and get help.
Dating violence hurts all of us. So step up and help end it. Because one is too many.
One is too many.
One is too many.
One is too many.
Because one is too many.
One is too many. That's been out there, but it's right at the White House now. This was yesterday, Joe Biden with this stern warning.
No man has a right ever to raise his hand to a woman. Period. End of story. It is assault if they do.
You would think people might understand that, but there it is being emphasized at the White House yesterday. Annie Clark is with us. She's co-founder of End Rape on Campus. It's an advocacy group that has supported people filing federal Title IX and Clery Act complaints against universities in situations of sexual misconduct, trying to get more tough action, more concerted, transparent action on college sexual assault. Annie Clark, stand by. With us right now from Washington, Senator Claire McCaskill, Democratic Senator from Missouri. She's been very prominent in working on military sexual assault. Now she's prominent in dealing on college sexual assault. Senator McCaskill, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Why have you gotten engaged with this problem, Senator?
Well, I spent a number of years of my career in the courtroom prosecuting sexual assaults. So I bring years of experience understanding the complexities of these cases, especially when it is a defense that there was consent. And I also have college-age daughters who have told me that, unfortunately, there is a way too common an attitude that women who find themselves in this position where they have been the victim of a felony crime, that they second-guess themselves, that they worry too much about whether or not they did something wrong, and we haven't really put the systems in place that support them and empower them so that we can hold these perpetrators accountable. And that's really what's missing with this silent epidemic on college campuses.
Senator, you've been involved in prosecuting sexual assault for a long time before you became a U.S. Senator, so you're a good person to ask, I think, what you see here? Is this just more women and others, we should say, speaking up? Or do we have a greater volume of sexual assault? And if so, why?
Well, I think we do. But that's one of the reasons that we've got to do more work and, you know, put shining a bright light on these college campuses and getting at the statistics, getting at these anonymous climate surveys where you can find out exactly how students feel about safety and whether or not they have been victimized. I think part of it is that it wasn't that long ago when I went to college, when I began college, there were separate dorms for men and women, and there were curfews, and there were really strict rules about alcohol on campus. And I think some of that has come with a different culture in terms of the permissiveness of what goes on. We see more victims in their freshman year than we see in subsequent years. So, and a lot of it is these young women have to learn when they are being victimized. You don't have to have perfect judgment to be a victim of a crime. Just because you drank too much doesn't give anyone the right to commit a felony against you. And I think, you know, educating women, and that's why this making these systems victim-centric, making sure that the moment this victim wants to talk to someone confidentially or otherwise, that they are getting good information and a system of support that will allow them to have the confidence and the courage to come forward and actually make the criminal accusation that can really help us turn the corner on this.
There's so many interesting elements in that, Senator McCaskill, but let me go to this one because you raise it. Do we have a freedom problem here, you know, living together side by side, freer than in the past, or do we have an enforcement problem, a college take responsibility problem?
Well, I think there may be a little of both, but what we have to focus on here is enforcement. You know, frankly, it's none of our business if young people consensually, I don't like it as a mother that they would drink too much. I don't like it as a mother that there might be a coarsening of our society in terms of some of these cultural elements, but it's none of our business as a government what people are doing with each other as long as they are of legal age. But it is our business when there is a crime. And that's what the focus has to be, that when someone has sex with someone that has not consented, whether has not consented because they're being forced or has not consented because they're incapacitated, that's a felony. And we need to give these young women and young men who are victimized more information and more support so they can face a process that, frankly, has been daunting. And that's the other thing we have to do is make sure we get the training out there so these interviews that are done with these victims, the first interview that's done with them is a forensic interview that doesn't accuse them, that doesn't try to pick apart their story, but rather supports them in recalling the most traumatic moment of their life.
I want to get Annie Clark in here with you. I'm sure you know Annie, but let me ask you first, if I may, Senator McCaskill, you've done a lot of work on sexual assault in the U.S. military. Now you're focusing here as well, and you've got a history of prosecuting sexual assault. How are military sexual assault and campus sexual assault like and unlike?
Well, they are similar in that it's a closed cultural environment. If you come forward on a military base, it is highly likely that everyone's going to know about it. Same thing on a college campus. There is also a lot of peer pressure and, frankly, a lot of similarity in terms of the bulk of the ages of the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is some of that that's the same. But there is also a great deal of difference. It's much more likely that your victim in a college sexual assault is going to be peer-to-peer, whereas in a military, you could have someone who actually has some supervisory authority over you that could be victimizing you. So there are some differences, and obviously there's a difference between the UCMJ, the Uniform Court of Military Justice, and criminal codes. Frankly, one of the reasons the college campus thing is so complex is that there are so many different laws in every state about age of consent and degree of sexual assaults and forcible versus non-consensual. That is all added to the issues that we have in terms of unifying the response on campus with campus law enforcement with the civilian law enforcement that ultimately would be responsible for bringing the case to a prosecutor and getting the perpetrator in court.
Senator McCaskill, stand by. We're going to hear in just a moment from a member of the White House task force. Annie Clark, you've got the bullhorn. Senator McCaskill has the legislative power or a piece of it. What do you want from her, Annie?
I would say just first to very much agree with what Senator McCaskill was saying with the military and colleges being separate and different, but also very similar. And I think one piece that is so similar as students or as young men and women enlisted, they go to these places expecting to be protected, expecting to be safe, especially within either their own ranks or own universities. And so when they're denied access to resources, when they are blamed for something that happens to them by the very institution that's supposed to protect them, that's institutional betrayal. And a lot of survivors in both of these systems are saying that that betrayal of that institution is worse than the initial assault. And I think that's very telling in the response side. Now, a common denominator on the prevention side is primary and secondary education and starting consent, starting healthy relationship talk way earlier than either first-year orientation or in the military. If we've started that conversation then, we've started too late. And so I think it's two-pronged. We need to start prevention earlier for both of these systems, and then the response side has to be fixed.
Annie, stand by. And Senator McCaskill, lots of callers for the two of you. Amber in Clarksville, Tennessee. Amber, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Comment, question kind of thing. I've been in school now for a couple of years.
Okay.
And I hate saying it, but I know several girls or several women, young women, that have been sexually assaulted while on campus. And a lot of them have gone to the police department on campus and even for our city. And instead of helping the victims and prosecuting the men who did the, the assault, instead, they make it seem where it's the girl's fault, to the point where now, and I'm hearing it more and more often, the women don't want to come forward because they already know nothing's going to be done. So I guess my question is how do we, prepare the women, to get them to defend themselves?
Senator McCaskill, would you like to respond to Amber? And Amber, thank you very much for your call. Senator McCaskill?
Well, Amber, you really are touching upon the crucial, crucial element of this. That is, at the moment of report, how is a victim treated? And is the person who is talking to that victim fully trained on how to get factual information, but do it in a way that doesn't send the wrong signal? And the problem you have is invariably so many of these reports are actually occurring at places where you don't have trained personnel. And then you have the added complexity that you've got university police, and there's always a natural friction between university police and the municipal police. And I don't think many Americans understand that jurisdiction for these crimes does not lie in the federal government. And Title IX can do nothing to hold a perpetrator criminally accountable. This is just about the university doing an investigation and adjudication as to whether or not a student should be expelled or suspended. So we've got to do this. That's why our work is going to spend so much time working with local prosecutors and local law enforcement and university law enforcement to try to bridge this gap. Because right now, these cases are not making it over that divide to the criminal justice system where someone can actually be held criminally accountable. And that is a vicious cycle, because then young women see, well, if nothing's going to happen, why should I put myself through it? Why should I even have the courage to come forward and talk about the most personally private and traumatic moment of my life if no one is going to do anything and if I'm going to be victimized all over again?
Claire McCaskill, please stand by. And Annie Clark with us right now from Santa Barbara, California, is Catherine Lehman, Assistant Secretary for Civil Rights at the Department of Education. She's a member of the White House Task Force to Protect Students from Sexual Assault. Catherine Lehman, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for having me.
You may have heard we had a caller from Tennessee right there saying, look, on her campus, young women go to the police. They're not taken seriously. What in this new White House report, this push, might turn that around?
You know, it's a clear goal for us in the Office of Civil Rights and also through the task force itself to make sure that all survivors are taken seriously and that schools understand and live up to their obligations to investigate, to provide interim relief to students, to make sure that they send a clear message all throughout the campus community that sexual violence is not tolerated, it's not who we are as a community, and that perpetrators need to be held responsible. So, that, you know, the kind of concerns that the caller raised are exactly the kind of concerns that the task force and the Office of Civil Rights are designed to combat and to see changed.
Senator McCaskill, you're on Capitol Hill. Is there further room to take this legislatively? If so, what would you like to see done?
Well, I think there is. I think, but what I learned in the military sexual assault is that it's really important to get the policy right, to put the politics aside and get the policy right.
Yep.
So we're going to spend some time on this. I've sent out an aggressive and comprehensive, statistically valid random sample survey to college campuses all across the country to take a detailed and in-depth look at what systems and processes are in place right now across this country. Then we're going to have a series of roundtables, and then we'll have some hearings, and then we'll draft legislation. I do know that we have some complicated statutory requirements as it relates between the SAVE Act, the Clery Act, and Title IX. I think we can do some work there to simplify and streamline what universities should do and how they should do it in a way that will make it simpler. And by the way, the task force is helpful here because they've put out some guidance to universities that will help them in this kind of tricky territory. But also look at sanctions. I'm not sure how realistic it is that our sanction is removing all federal funding, because that's not going to happen. We're not going to punish innocent students with removing their student aid because a university didn't handle an investigation appropriately. So I think we need to look at fines and other kinds of sanctions that might also be brought to bear here. But then at the end of the day, look at how we can encourage universities to work more carefully with local prosecutors and local law enforcement, because I'm convinced that we will not really turn this corner until we put some of these perpetrators in prison and send a message that this is criminal behavior. That will empower victims. That will allow victims to understand that they truly have been the victim of a crime. And frankly, it's not pleasant to think in those terms, but that's what has to happen.
U.S. Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri, thank you very much for being with us today, Senator.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you and all the work that my colleagues that have been on this call are also doing.
And Catherine Lehman, who's been on the White House Task Force to Protect Students from Sexual Assault. Catherine Lehman in Santa Barbara, thank you very much for being here as well.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
Annie Clark, I can't remember a time when this got more attention. I mean, hats off to you. I don't know if we've got a solution here. We're going to spend some more time looking at what's going on and why, but you've really got this up at a high level of public attention. Wow, Annie, way to go.
Thank you. And it wasn't just me. I think we stood very much on the shoulders of everyone who has come before us. This has been a problem for a very long time, and it's now that it's getting federal attention for a variety of reasons. I think, though, we do have sort of a collective action problem right now with our universities. Universities know it's an issue, but they're scared to step up. It's going to take one university or maybe even a team to kind of step up, admit they have a problem, and move forward. Right now, we're just seeing denial. So I'm looking forward to universities working together and with the task force, with the White House, to move forward.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the White House call to action on sexual assault on college campuses. Big public service announcement campaign out along with this. If she doesn't consent or she can't consent, it's rape. You'll hear right here. This has got what Vice President Biden and Seth Meyers, Daniel Craig, Steve Carell, Dula Hill, Benicio del Toro. Here's just one of the ads out there.
If she doesn't consent or if she can't consent, it's rape. It's assault.
It's a crime. It's wrong.
If I saw it happening, I was taught you have to do something about it.
If I saw it happening, I speak up.
If I saw it happening, I'd never blame her. I'd help her.
Because I don't want to be a part of the problem.
I want to be a part of the solution.
Annie Clark is with us. She was a victim of sexual assault herself, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And there's been a big follow-on to that. She's one of those who's been instrumental in pushing this up into more national spotlight, illumination. With us right now as well from Hanover, New Hampshire, is Ingalise Amir. She's Senior Associate Dean at Dartmouth College for Student Academic Support Services and Campus Life. Dartmouth is currently revising its policies on sexual assault after a Title IX investigation started last summer. Ingalise Amir, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
We've heard in this hour that people are just seeing denial on college campuses from colleges and universities themselves about the problem. Is Dartmouth in denial?
We are not in denial. We are stepping up to the plate and are excited to be working with the federal government and the attention that this is getting, and are doing many things that were suggested in the report. And also taking even further steps and having a conference this summer bringing colleges and universities together, because I think we can really learn from each other. And so lots of good things going on at Dartmouth, especially the bystander intervention. Frankly, I want to say we see students all the time stepping up for one another at Dartmouth and helping each other. And if someone is in an uncomfortable situation, that student helping another student, calling safety and security, getting them the help that they need. So I'm very encouraged by the direction.
We've got questions for you. Annie Clark, this bystander intervention we're hearing more about lately, encouraging other young women or young men who see something heading in a bad direction to get in there and say something, say, hey, cut it out, she doesn't want to do that, whatever it may be. How effective is that, Annie?
I think bystander intervention is definitely important, but I would be wary of treating it as a silver bullet solution to all prevention. When you have bystander intervention, that means there is a situation, something's off, something's not going right, and you're encouraging somebody to have the courage and step up. That's very important. However, that action is too late. What we need more is primary prevention. We need something before that moment. And so while I think it's effective, I would just be very cautious in tossing all the eggs in one basket, saying bystander intervention is the answer.
Let me go to John. I'll come to you on that, Ingalise, if I may. But John in Kensington,
thanks.
Connecticut. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. You know, sometimes the solutions are not easy, but maybe sometimes moving towards it can be simple. I bet you if you took a college campus and you asked them all to report how many security officers they have during the week, you would be appalled to find out the ratio of how many they have nights and on weekends. They spend more of their energy protecting parking than they do protecting these young ladies on campus, and that's appalling. They allow these young kids to roam the campus free all weekend like wild men, and they have one security guard sitting in the parking lot worrying about the parking. I'll bet you take a campus in the United States, try to get on it during the week and park illegally, and you'll be tossed off in 20 minutes.
Run the numbers. Yeah. More attention to parking than to sexual assault. John, I appreciate your call. Ingalise Amir, I mean, there's one aspect, just plain police presence, campus security presence. But let me ask you, with that and beyond that, if I may, I apologize, but if you've done some soul searching, I mean, a lot of colleges have been in a rough light on this, Dartmouth among them, but if you've done some soul searching, what was it that you, with that deep honesty, recognized you were not doing or paying attention to before that you are now, and how? And then what about security officers?
So the thing that I think is most significant that we are paying attention to now is that we are supporting the victim in a holistic way. So we have a SART team that meets when we find out about a case, and we figure out the best way to support that student and also not to overwhelm that student with lots and lots of people asking them to repeat their story over and over again. The other thing we do is we work very closely with the Hanover Police Department. So anytime a student reports a sexual assault, we report it directly to the Hanover Police Department. We take that very seriously.
Anytime and every time, you're saying?
Anytime and every time. We have a memo of understanding with the police department, and we both honor it. And we have an excellent collaboration with them, and that helps a lot. Something that people need to understand is when a victim comes forward, it is very traumatic for them. And we want to support them, and they're not always sure at that moment what action they want to take. So it's an iterative process, and we help them every step of the way through that process. And I think the thing that we needed to do is get more people involved in that helping of the process. So we have first responder training now for more staff, for more faculty. And frankly, I do think bystander intervention is an excellent way to deal with this. And we've trained 800 students already, and we plan to train another 1,400 this summer.
Let's go to Ross in Stowe, Vermont. Ross, you're on the air. What do you think?
Well, I think it's been I really don't in some ways understand why it's taken so long to have this conversation. I think that rape and sexual assault is one of the single most abhorrent crimes that anybody can commit, and the fact that it's been pushed under the radar in some of our most respected institutions is abhorrent. It's a global. It's not just a local. It's a global issue. The subjugation of females by males is one of the biggest problems that our society has today.
So you're for getting in there and acting on it, and we're seeing the White House do that. Ross, let me hold that sentiment and get one more right here. I appreciate your call. Joe in Madison, Connecticut. Joe, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I want to mention one thing that I haven't heard yet, and that's the person who is falsely accused and what happens to these women when they do that. There needs to be some serious repercussions for that. I was actually falsely accused in college, and it just ruins your life at the time. It's unimaginable. I wouldn't want anybody to go through it. Finally, the woman did admit that she, you know, made a false accusation, but this was after some time.
If it was false, why did she do it, Joe? I'm just curious. If it was false, why?
I'm not sure. She was drinking at the time, and she wasn't sure. I mean, I don't want to get into the details.
Yeah, yeah.
But alcohol seems to always be an issue here, but there really needs to be something said for the falsely accused, and let's keep that in mind when thinking of rules and regulations as well.
Joe, I appreciate your call. Ingalise Amir, what about this? I mean, a couple of things here. First of all, why do you think this is becoming a bigger problem, if indeed it is? And then what about there can be ambiguities. How do you get tough without, going overboard and ruining lives?
Well, first I want to say that I think this has been an issue in higher ed for a long time. I started my career a long time ago as a resident and assistant on a all first year floor, and I worked with two female students who were struggling in those days about this and trying to get them help. So I think this has been a critical and important issue in higher ed for a long time, and I'm just glad that it's getting the attention now that it should. The other thing is that we run a fair and objective judicial process for both students, because both of the students are Dartmouth students. So we need to make sure that we are running a clear and fair and a least traumatic process that we can for our students. And that's what we do.
Annie, let me ask you this. Taking it straight to the municipal police, that may seem obvious to do that, but it is not, I guess. How rare, how unusual is that?
Yeah, Tom, I'm really glad you asked that. That's a question we get a lot. Why didn't you go to the police? Why did you go to your university? And I think especially for a lot of young students, being away for the first time, it makes sense. You go to somewhere you trust, especially since we know the stat is that 97% of rapists, according to Rain and other sources, never spend a day in jail. So the likelihood of justice is slim, and you know the process is going to be re-victimizing. And a lot of students just want to continue their education. They're not looking to go through a trial. They want to attend their chemistry class. They want to feel safe on campus. And institutions under Title IX and the Clery Act have to provide things that the local police cannot. So, for example, academic accommodations, housing accommodations. And I want to bring up mental health. With, you know, PTSD, depression, a lot of our students experience this after a sexual assault. And we need to make sure those resources on campus are streamlined, they're all communicating, they're not siloed, and that they're effective. And this is something that universities not only have the obligation to do, but should do because they want to. They should want to support their students.
Yep.
And so going to the police is an individual decision, but many people don't for a variety of factors that I just discussed.
Annie, let me ask you if I may. I mean, here's Inge-Lise, who says this has been a problem in higher ed for a long time. Now, but then people are going to be listening and say, one in five, are you kidding me? What a huge number. And we've got all this attention on it. Is there a bigger problem now than in the past? And if so, what is that about? Is there now a culture of sexual assault that there wasn't before? And if so, why?
I don't know if it's necessarily that much more or just that we're talking about it. Like Senator McCaskill was saying earlier, there could be a little bit of both. But I actually think it's now that students know their rights, know they're being, you know, mistreated. And we've started to put a face to it. Some of the things we've been trying to do with different campaigns have been breaking the silence of what it means to be a survivor and letting people know it's not their fault and it's okay to speak out and you're not to blame. And so I think all of these things coming together, so the rights piece and putting a face to Jane Doe and students, you know, taking action against their universities in a way that's unprecedented has gotten the attention of the White House. So I don't think it's necessarily happening more. I just think we're able to do something about it and being able to connect on social media, collaborate, plan. I really think that's the change. And then coming after, you know, the conversation about the military, it just seems like this is the right time.
Carla in Tiffin, Iowa. Carla, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. Mm-hmm. I'd like to know why women have no responsibility for their own safety. The men are supposed to be gallant, supposed to be gentlemen, supposed to show restraint, but women do not have to show any kind of restraint at all. Now, you don't teach those women to jump on moving freight trains or to go up to a grizzly bear and grab the cub out of the mother's paws. You don't teach them to get drunk and run back and forth in traffic. But for some reason, it's okay to go to frat parties, crawl into bed with a couple of guys, strip naked, get fallen down drunk, have no responsibility at all for their own safety.
Carla, do you know firsthand somehow of what you speak there? I mean, are you imagining this, or is this something that you somehow know well?
Well, I don't know well, but I did go to college for 7 years in my younger days, and I pay attention to the news, and I'm listening to what people say.
Yeah.
You know, the women are being taught that it's not their responsibility, it's the men's fault, you have no responsibility at all, and you know what? This is very insulting to women. In some parts of the world, because women are stupid, helpless, weak, pathetic, and oversexed, they are not allowed to do anything. They're supposed to stay in the house. But here, even though it's similar, women are not expected to have any kind of responsibility for judgment, good sense, smarts. They're being taught to be victims. But here they can do anything.
Carla, I'm not sure what you mean about the world where women are stupid, et cetera. Maybe that's a reputation or a cultural view there, but I get what you're saying here to some extent. Annie, what about it? You don't walk up to a she-bear and take the cub. I mean, is there something in our sexual culture that is kind of putting us in a danger zone here? Carla wants women to sort of pull back more generally. What do you say to that, Annie?
I would say, first of all, to any survivor, anybody listening, if you are a victim or survivor of sexual assault, that it is not your fault. But I would also address this issue because I think it is a common misconception. People blame the victim. This is not a very good analogy, but, you know, if you left your house unlocked or something and somebody were to rob you, nobody would blame the victim in that situation. Sexual assault is the only crime where we consistently blame the victim.
Move it off
and
the victim, then. Move it to culture. Do we have a cultural problem? Are we not being honest with ourselves culturally? Is there a degree of, I don't know, freedom or license here that is sort of tempting the bear? Or is that a bad way to look at it? What do you say?
Yeah. I think, obviously, everyone, as people, as students, you know, we should be responsible and, you know, safe. But I think we need to we need to start shifting the frame away from teaching women how to protect themselves and teaching men how to treat women, how not to rape. So if you go, you know, even now, if you were to look at university policies, a lot of them are about safety and protection instead of prevention. And I, as I said earlier, I think that needs to start much before the college age.
Ingalisa Mir, you're at Dartmouth. You've got a new program in effect there, and it is tougher. What's the overall effect on the campus of that? Do the students know how to deal with it? Does it make immediate sense to them, or they're like, what's going on here?
So part of what we're doing with our new program is also lots of education on what the program is, how it will impact students. And I do think it's making a strong statement to our students, both that are here and incoming students, that we take sexual assault very seriously, every sexual assault, and that we will pursue any charges that are filed by students about sexual assault.
That puts kind of sharp edge on the whole issue. At the same time, it's getting a whole lot more attention in public. This is really interesting, and we hope that we can get a handle on it college by college nationally and bring these numbers down, get this into more humane territory. Grateful to the two of you for being with us this hour. Ingalisa Amir, Senior Associate Dean at Dartmouth College. Ingalisa, thank you very much for joining us this hour.
Thank you, Tom.
And Annie Clark, co-founder of End Rape on Campus. Annie, thank you for your work. Congratulations on the attention you're getting on this, and good luck to you.
Thank you so much, Tom, for having me, and thank you for all the other activists who've been working with me on this.
Listeners, thanks for your candor and openness with us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.